Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Incomparable, number 599, January 2022.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Incomparable. I'm your host, Jason Snell, and we're going to be talking in this episode about a Disney Plus Marvel TV series. It is Hawkeye. Starring, yeah, and people were like, why would there be a show about Hawkeye? Who wants to see that? And the answer is, I kind of wanted to see it because I, like several of the other people here who were on a podcast with me, 9 years ago, episode 157, you could look it up. We were intrigued by the fact that just as Jeremy Renner was beginning to inhabit the movie part of Hawkeye, there came a comic book that told a different story about a bunch of guys in tracksuits who said bro and a dog with one eye who was lucky, and about a Kate Bishop Hawkeye plus the regular Hawkeye, and it was a delightful comic series. And now here we are, all this time later, and they sort of made it into a TV show, but kind of not, but sort of. Anyway.
Indistinguishable from the original.
We're going to be discussing it now. Let me introduce my panel. He jumped the gun and revealed everything. Spoiler alert, he was his own spoiler. It was Chip Sutterth. Hello, Chip.
Jason, in purple, Hawkeye stunning.
Cicero Holmes is also here. Hi, Cicero.
Is what heroes do is arrest their mothers on Christmas Eve?
Sometimes, if sometimes. But Lisa Schmeiser is also here.
I don't have any relevant quotes. I'm just happy to be here.
It's good. Well, you were on that original Hawkeye episode, which is great. Yes. So was Dan Morin. Hi, Dan. Mm-hmm.
Jason, there must be some mistake. I've never worked a day in my life.
You've gotten to my favorite character already.
All right. So yeah, this is interesting because I think what we could say about this show, for anybody who has read the Matt Fraction authored comic series, it is clearly inspired by it, but also not really an adaptation of it. More like sort of taking some inspiration and some elements from it. The title sequence is clearly inspired by the art of it. Unfortunately, the artist not compensated for that because it's Disney and they don't pay anybody. But it is clearly inspired by it. There are the tracksuit mafia. It is about Clint and Kate and their relationship, and there's a dog, but it's also a very different kind of story because they got to fit it into the MCU and they've got their six episodes to tell their story. So I wanted, especially for people who read those comics, did everybody here read those comics?
Yes.
I did.
No.
I did, yes.
Cicero.
I reread them.
I did not.
Cicero did not. Okay, well, Cicero, you're going to be fascinated when we talk about a thing that you didn't read. I wanted to start there, which is, I will make my initial admission, and then I'd like to know from the other people who read it. It took me a couple of episodes to accept the fact that while this looked kind of like that thing that I read and loved and bought in hardcover and have in a place of honor in my home, I had to accept that it wasn't really that, but more like a show that took what it wanted from it. I had to get over the fact that this was not an adaptation, but more like something that took the parts that it wanted to and used them in a different way. How did you all feel about that?
I reread it actually a few months ago because I was gearing up for the show, and in reading it and having not read it for several years, and being very fluent now in the MCU and where everything was, I was just reading through this thinking, well, they can't just adapt this. It would make absolutely no sense in the MCU.
Right.
Hawkeye That's lives, not where any of the characters
Hawkeye's
are.
Hawkeye's single and lives in an apartment.
Yeah, just, exactly. Yeah. You're going to have to do a lot of bending over backwards, and it doesn't seem like it would really be a great fit. But I do think what the show managed to accomplish is that it is definitely a love letter to those comics, embodied by the relationship between Clint and Kate, which is, you know, the dynamic between the two of them as sort of a mentor-mentee, snarky back and forth. I think that's such such a huge element of what makes the comics work that they tried to import a lot of that here. And in that, I think they were extremely successful. But I think I was very willing to go in feeling like, all right, this is not going to be an adaptation of these comics. It simply cannot be. But I hope that it takes away a lot of the flavor and tone and things that I enjoy about those. And in that, I think it absolutely succeeded.
Yeah, I got to know the character Hawkeye best from the old West Coast Avengers days. And that era of the Marvel main universe Hawkeye, you know, kind of goofy, not exactly born to lead an Avengers team, you know. And the Hawkeye of the Fraction and AHA series is sort of an extension of that, you know. He fails, frequent failure, always getting beaten up. I'm searching for the right word, but
this guy?
Yeah, and exactly. And then yeah, trying to plaster elements from that comic onto this Hawkeye, who was introduced, I think the phrase duller than dishwater is overused, perhaps. Mm. But the Hawkeye that was introduced in Thor and then in the Avengers is based on the Ultimate Marvel Universe, yeah, Hawkeye.
Not which interesting is a much, in any way.
Not interesting in any way. So this is a reclamation effort.
Ooh. Yeah, I'm going to disagree a little bit, only because I think that the Hawkeye in Ultimates was interesting with the way he was written as having this pretty sharply bifurcated life, where on the one hand, he runs around with a group of equally amoral superhero figures and gleefully murders people in quips. But on the other hand, he's got a partner in kids. And that was that's some nice narrative tension, some stakes in the comic, right? But I think I'm on the record on at least one episode of The Incomparable saying that the problem is you can't put Ultimates Hawkeye in the MCU, which is what they clearly did.
Yeah.
And they kept shoehorning things in with the Ultimate story. Like he does have, he has a surprise wife. He has surprise children. And when this show came out, I thought it was incredibly clever for the writers to take the stuff that worked from the Hawkeye comic and use it to effectively put their big Hawkeye mistake to bed, which is what they've done. They've basically like closed the door on that. We're going to forget that he was, you know, based on, you know, an extreme early aughties Murderbot kind of guy. And now he's basically like Avengers dad.
So, well,
and you can bring him back with like phone calls to the future where like Kate can call him from job sites where she's shooting aliens or whatever. And he could be like, have you tried this arrow? And like, like they can use him as like the dude who ends up doing like tech support on arrows during battles. So it was really interesting how they took this, the sensibility from the Fractions comics and used it to rewrite and bury the history of the really bad characterization they had done for the movies.
Well, at Matt Fraction's comic, again, 8-9 years ago, I think the passage of time really has allowed exactly what you said, Lisa, to happen, which is the Hawkeye of like Thor is not the guy you would see in this. They have, time has gone on to the point where they can now do the version of Hawkeye who is too old for this crap, right? And that allows them to kind of say, all right, it's not that this guy has been through a lot. He saw Natasha die on that alien planet. He feels really bad. He's got his family that we've now met. He's been through a lot. He's lost a lot of people. He's kind of over it in a way that when we met Hawkeye in the MCU, he wasn't going to be that. And so by waiting, you give him this chance. And I got to say, you know, I know a lot of people don't like Jeremy Renner, and he in real life, he seems to be a really kind of weird dude. But I think he gives a great performance in this. I think
yes,
he really does sell the whole, I'm just really tired and I don't want to be here, but I can't leave. So let's just get this over with. Like, I think he does a really good job of being something close to what that sad sack Hawkeye in the comic is, just getting there from a totally different place.
close enough anyway. I disagree with Lisa in terms of I don't think it's burying. I think it's advancing the character. He's still the same character, just a natural outgrowth of who that guy was over years, over experiences, you know, warming him up to the family and introducing a new character as a foil and partner to really bring out some different sides to him. I still think he's the same dude. He's just way more enjoyable now.
I was gonna say, I don't think Avengers did right by him, but that's also
it's time for him.
Exactly. That's a challenge of trying to put together, okay, we have to plausibly bring these people together and give them something to fight, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's a logistics issue. And one of the things I had liked about his character were like the low beat, the low key beats where, again, he really does seem to be like your dad Avenger, where he steps in with Wanda several times with, right, if you're going to walk out of this, you're an Avenger. If not, stay here. I'll send your brother for you later. It's okay. Maybe there's some snacks. And that was kind of the energy that he kept bringing back to a lot of the movies. Like in Captain America Civil War, he ends up basically dadding Ant-Man for a while. And what I enjoyed in the series is, you know, we see him with his actual children, like, and he's very much dad on vacation with the kids and trying to make memories and a little nervous about it. But the way he steps into a relationship with Kate, where part of it is mentorship, but part of it is simply this kid doesn't have a father. And like, there's just some sort of weird thing in his wiring where he's like, fine, I have to watch out for her. And he even does it with Echo.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Where like he has the conversation with her where this woman who has been trying to kill him and maybe threatening his family, he's like, look, you realize they're using you. It's not going to end well
yeah,
for you.
Let me give you some advice. Please.
Exactly. Yeah. And also, have you checked the tire pressure lately? I'm worried about that.
Well, even a little bit with Yelena too, I think. And we'll talk about that. But like,
yes,
yeah,
he did that. Like, yeah. So that was basically it. Like he is basically, are you a teenage superpowered or young woman in the MCU who perhaps has father issues? Hawkeye can be your dad for a minute.
Cicero, what do you think about this Clint Barton?
Yeah, well, what's funny is that like I didn't come into the series with the same nerd baggage that the rest of you came in with.
I resemble that remark.
I have so much nerd baggage, I have to check that
please,
nerd baggage.
Cicero, it's a nerd quiver, okay?
Yeah, right. I have a nerd baggage scale, yeah, so I'll carry right on.
but so like what's funny is hearing that and realizing, of course, right? Like everything that we've watched in the MCU is derivative of something that we've seen in the comics and slightly altered. But yeah, this sounds like this was Hawkeye is like the Fractions quick fire challenge. You know,
ooh,
like they just took all of the ingredients and they gave it to somebody and was like, all right, here are the ingredients. Now go ahead and make a series out of that. And what has been cool about Clint Barton is that everybody's been right. Like everyone that's said something about Hawkeye and Clint Barton and Jeremy Renner have been right. But what we've been allowed to do is as we learn more about who Hawkeye is, who Clint Barton is, they remove some walls, and that allows Jeremy Renner to portray the character with more, a little bit softer, right? Every iteration, every time we learn something new, he gets to play him a little bit more sympathetic, right? He's still the same guy, but it's almost like we're seeing him different, but he's been the same person all along.
It's kind of cool in that all the other, I mean, when you think about it, right, like with the exception of Black Widow sort of posthumously getting her own movie, Hawkeye is obviously the Avenger who doesn't really have an origin story. And in this sense, we sort of get his origin story in reverse, where we, over the course of the MCU, we, as Cicero was saying, we sort of peel back layers on this guy and realize there's, at first you think like, he's a guy with a bow. What else do I need to know? And then we unpack that a little bit and we spend some time with his family and we see his relationship with some of the other Avengers. And as Lisa says, being sort of a father figure and a mentor to a lot of them and realizing, okay, he's this sort of former spy. He's kind of out of the life, but he also has these, you know, feelings of responsibility. I think probably a lot of which date back to his time with Natasha, you know, with sort of his brief, the brief voice cameo we get of him in Black Widow and like the story we've sort of put together from what happened there. And that's kind of, it's another way to handle this. Like rather than sort of info dump it down into a Black Widow movie, kind of like they did, we actually get to sort of spend some time stretching out this character and getting this sort of reverse origin story for how did this guy, we see the end result, but how did he get to where he is?
A decade later, they actually do something with the fact that he's the sort of person who can bring Natasha in from the cold.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It took a decade to get there. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You know, but it was worth it. What a payoff.
A couple hundred incomparable episodes, really.
Yeah. We've been working on this problem for years, people.
Right. Several hundred.
I want to move to Hailee Steinfeld as Kate because that's the other, this is a double act. And I know that there is a cynical way to view this. I think I said this about the Black Widow movie too, where it's like they introduce Yelena and they're like, oh yeah, sure, there's gotta be Black Widow 2 because they killed the first one off, so we gotta meet the second one. But like, and so I guess you could look at this cynically and say, well, yeah, they're making young versions and new versions of these characters who the actors are gonna age out and their contracts are up and they're expensive or whatever. And yet, you know, the Fraction comic is about Kate Bishop too, and the idea that Kate Bishop in the comic is also Hawkeye. One of the things about the comic is that they call each other Hawkeye back and forth, and I kept waiting for that to happen, and of course they save it to the very end of the series, and it's a great payoff. But what I thought was interesting is in introducing Kate Bishop, they've got to do a lot of work that the comic didn't have to do because she was an established character, in saying here is this young woman who is basically another Hawkeye or the new Hawkeye, however you want to think of it. And not only did I really like her performance, I thought she was really good, but I thought the way they handled the character as, because you're like, how could there be another Hawkeye? And they're like, okay, here's how, which is, and you tell the story, like she was an athlete and she learned how to shoot arrows among all sorts of other things and to fight and to do all these things that a superhero kind of person would need to do. And there's a reason for it. And she is kind of screwed up and she destroys parts of her college campus at the beginning when we first meet her, right? So she's a screw up, but she's also brilliant, which is like the perfect material for a character like this. And I thought that the way they handled her was pretty great. The fact that we see that she is this very privileged person, but also kind of from a tragic backstory, and she finds out just sort of like how she already knew how privileged she was, but then she finds out that it's way worse than that. As it goes along, and like I really enjoyed how they handled Kate, and I think Hailee Steinfeld's performance was good, and she's literally, I mean, but as the show goes along, you actually almost kind of believe that she looks up to Hawkeye, which is like,
you got to give the unsung hero of the MCU, or a person who doesn't, I think, get enough credit, is Sarah Halley Finn, who is the casting director for pretty much every movie.
Oh, she's
and
so good.
Holy cow, do they, I mean, like, Hailee Steinfeld is a great cast here. And I mean, like, she basically steals every single scene until Florence Pugh shows up later on.
Right.
And like,
right. And commits grand larceny. Oh,
right. You do not think that somebody will see, but like, we'll get into that. But Hailee Steinfeld is really great. I think her dynamic with Jeremy Renner is really good. She does manage to really embody the sort of what we know of Kate Bishop, and certainly like bring Kate Bishop into the MCU in the sense of this young woman who is extremely cocky and extremely like, you know, into this whole like idea of helping people and being a superhero, but in a way that I think generally isn't annoying or irritating. Like it's genuine. It's kind of endearing in like how much she really believes in all of this. And I think she's a great character. She really is. Just the enthusiasm that bleeds off of her in every single scene is what makes this show really like, just to me, a ride worth following. It's just, she is so into the entire thing and so gung ho. She's a force of nature, always moving the plot forward. And that is a great thing for a show like this to have.
As much as this series draws from Matt Fraction's series, this Kate Bishop is not the same as the comics Kate Bishop.
Right.
Just the same way that this Clint Barton isn't the same. You can't turn Jeremy Renner into the lovable loser. And I think one of the interesting things that they do is they take some of that put upon stuff and lay it on to Haley Steinfeld. She's got as many bandages going on over the course of these six episodes as Jeremy Renner does. She's not the brains of the outfit the way that Kate Bishop kind of is in some parts of the old comic. They trade off a little bit, and I really, really like that. I don't think that I think that as the series goes on, Clint warms up, opens up, dads up, and Haley as Kate, Kate becomes a little more grounded, a little more responsible, but Kate takes as many punches as Clint does all series long. And I think that that's really neat.
She was the only one beat up by the Kingpin.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. She has the one-on-one with the Kingpin.
Kingpin, right.
That's her coming of age moment, right? That's like, you took on this terrifying guy and you survived, which is all
we're
really
asking.
First of
all, how much do you love that we basically have a second generation Avenger, which is what she's going to be. Let's not be coy.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But the second generation Avengers origin story starts with the Avengers origin story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is just like, on the one hand, it makes one feel old because that means the Marvel Universe has been around long enough for a legit generation to roll over and be replaced. But what I really enjoyed about Kate's evolution over the course of the six episodes is she goes from being confident that just because she's worked hard at being a hero, it's all going to work out, to discovering exactly how tilted a playing field is and understanding that the narrative of heroics is not as straightforward as she thought it was as a kid watching the Avengers take down the aliens who are about to you know, hit her penthouse apartment. And the conversation she has with Yelena is great because it's really the first time anyone's pushed back against this idea of, oh, you think he's a hero because he's done this. Well, I've seen him do the same thing and I have the exact opposite opinion. And you can just watch all sorts of pennies dropping behind Kate's eyes as she's all, okay, I really need to think about what a hero means and how these actions reverberate out. And I'm doing this now too. And oh my God.
It's got that feeling of, I'm sure all of us getting older have that feeling of the more you know, the less you know, right? Like the more you realize you don't know, right? Like as you keep going, you're like, oh, I feel it. At 22, I feel like I've got the world pretty well figured out. And then the older you get, you're like, oh no, I don't know anything.
Look, the Kate Bishop in episode one would not have turned her mom over to the police.
Sure.
Right. She would have cheerfully bought the lies and continued on her way. And she learns how to observe her mom over the course of the episodes, too. Like, you watch her watching her mom and Jack, which is just a sweet scene. And she realizes that, oh, my gosh, my mom has this whole life that's separate from me. And first you think it's that young adult thing where you're like, oh, my God, my parents are people. She's having that moment. And then you realize that that knowledge can also be used to be like, oh, my God, my mom is a criminal. This is her separate life from me. If I'm going to be a hero, what are the hard things I'm going to do? And, you know, putting your mom in jail on Christmas Eve is one of them.
It's not being able to shoot an arrow, right? Like that's the sort of the point is she's not a complete, even though she's very capable in fighting and shooting arrows and stuff like that. The point of the whole thing and sort of Hawkeye's point with her is you don't want to do this. It's much harder than you expect. You know, there are a lot of issues with it. And by the end, you get the sense that she's at least on the path to realizing all of the other things that you have to really kind of like sign up for if you're really going to walk down this path. Just I shoot arrows good does not qualify you to be an Avenger because you really need to like check the boxes and say, yes, I agree to all the terrible things that come with this job.
Yeah, I agree completely. What's funny for me about Kate Bishop and Haley Steinfeld, it for whatever reason, the entire series, she felt like Penny from Inspector Gadget for me, right? Like she was,
go on.
Right? She was very confident.
Brain?
Right, right. right, yeah, Lucky was Brain.
Yeah, that makes sense.
She was very confident, sometimes precociously confident, right? Like in this way that like, you know, like exactly like you said, Dan, where we're too young to realize that we shouldn't be you know, we shouldn't be as confident about the things that we're confident about. But I was, oh man, I sat there like a kid on Saturday morning, which makes me old. And, you know, and just ate it up like cereal. It was so much fun to just watch all of that happen, right? And the focus definitely was Kate Bishop. It was everything that she was doing brought everything else, you know, just kind of, she was the spice to every dish, every scene right. that she was in. It was incredible.
I also ate it up like cereal, specifically Count Chocula.
There you go. I was acknowledged. Yes. I was a Frankenberry.
Yeah.
Frankenberry.
That's good. Specifically Frankenberry. Yeah. I just, again, great casting. Because this is, you know, at its core, what is this show? That's why I like the whole idea that in the Hawkeye comic that they're both Hawkeye is here. It's not just about Clint as Hawkeye. It's about Kate becoming Hawkeye. It's both of those things and him showing her the ropes and you know, not believing that she's a pest at the beginning, but by the end he's like, all right, okay, you've kind of earned your stripes here a little bit and you can come to the house for Christmas and all right, okay, right? Like that's what it's about. And I thought that was a beautiful thing that they really do take you on that journey with Kate. Like Clint is Clint like throughout and he's rolling his eyes and he's like, geez, and I really want to just get home. But like Kate has that journey, that emotional journey, the acceptance of all the kind of messy stuff involved. And she has to fight Kingpin. She has to talk to Yelena. She has to like go through all the sort of the steps, you know, the steps you have to go through to be a superhero. Right.
And she has to take care of the dog.
Yeah, right.
True.
And I like that they mainly keep, I think what I enjoyed the most about this series is that unlike a lot of the other series we've seen, which I agree are perhaps more ambitious, this one, you know, having sort of almost a street level, as they often called sort of the, you know, the old Netflix shows and stuff right. like that, to me is really appealing, especially seeing somebody like Hawkeye who, you know, as we've talked about, gets beat up a lot, right? He is an ordinary dude. He is a dude who shoots arrows and hangs out with a bunch of superpowered people. And so having that element, I think, feels very relatable. And it brings a lot to the story because we are dealing with something that is a threat and it is big, but at the same time, the stakes are kind of small. And so as a result, our characters are doing things that are very plausible in a lot of cases, right? They're getting in punch-ups. You know, they're doing shooting arrows at things or, you know, I think about that last episode where Kate has to stop Yelena from going to kill Clint and she presses all the buttons in the elevator. Right. It's like, it's a stupid idea, but it's so good because it's like, I can't beat you. I know I can't beat you. I'm just going to be annoying. Yeah. And I think elements like that really make this work because it's like these two sort of scrappy underdogs trying to do what they can just to sort of keep everything, you know, keep a lid on everything. But at the same time, you know, they're kind of fighting uphill here. And I really appreciate that element. It is a sort of a trope that always rings well with me.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
If I have an issue with this, before we get on to some of the supporting characters and all, there's a lot to get through here. I wanted to mention an issue I have with the story, which is this. I think it's clear that part of the creative brief for this series was, it's about Clint. So let's talk about his time during the blip as Ronin, where he's doing, you know, sword stuff and killing lots of bad guys. And, you know, I could see how there's a creative brief of like, well, if we're going to do a Hawkeye show, he should have to grapple with his decision to be Ronin, and it should, you know, come back to haunt him, and he needs to be responsible for the fact that he killed a lot of people, although, you know, they were all bad, as Arnold Schwarzenegger would tell you, but still he killed a lot of people. And, you know, I don't think this show's heart is just in it. Like, I feel like the show is like, yeah, Ronin, I guess it causes some trouble for Clint. But like, does Clint ever really have a moment where he's like, you know, I made some bad decisions as Ronin, and I really need to pay and do penance? No. It's like, no, it's just sort of complicates some stuff for a little while to move the plot along. But I don't know, that it just
it's
struck
like having
me.
An embarrassing live journal, only your live journalist bodies.
It's not a moral thing that he's even grappling with. And I think part of that is it does tie into his background, right? He was a spy and probably an
killed
assassin.
A lot of people. Yeah, an assassin.
And I think he's
from
always kind of like, I did what I needed to do, and I don't, you know, I'm not going to grapple with whether it was right or wrong, but I'm going to own it.
Well, like one of the things that I think they could have done better in this series, or by Clint, period, and he references it super briefly with his conversation with Echo, which is one of my favorite moments in this whole series, is he's like, we're weapons. And we trust people to point us where they need us to go. And this shows you, like, you can choose to interpret this as, okay, this is where Clint sees his purpose, is I have a very specific set of skills. I trust the judgment of people who are going to point me where I want to go. And so maybe with that interpretation, what you're getting to is Ronan is a disaster because Ronan is Clint on his own, as opposed to being tactically deployed by Steve Rogers in the Avengers or with Natasha in S.H.I.E.L.D. or whatever. But we don't really see that play out more. And we never really saw that with any of the movies. Like, it's still not clear to me why he finds Ronan to be problematic other than he made some enemies. Like,
yeah, and that's what I mean is that the show, I feel like the show was given a creative brief by Kevin Feige or somebody to say you got to deal with Ronan, and the show's kind of like, yeah, I don't really want to do that, and I don't blame the show to not want to deal with it. In fact,
getting backed into a corner.
What they end up saying is, well, it's inconvenient because he killed Maya's dad, and so she's
like,
mad at him.
Like, he killed a lot of people, though. I mean,
and the costume, I'll just say the costume is a MacGuffin, right? Like, costume is just
a
MacGuffin.
Shaggy dog, yeah. But Yelena comes the closest to it when, you know, she tips her own hand on her own personality and her own perceptions when she's like, look, he's the sum of all of the really terrible things he's done. And, like, she's the only person in the MCU to really call out the fact that by some interpretations, Clint Barton's a serial killer. You know, I mean, say what you will about his effectiveness in clearing out the Yakuza, if that's how he unwinds after a stressful day of losing his family in the blip, that's still, like, you know, light mass murder as a hobby.
Well, he's, you know, I mean, he's got to strive for something. The
goals.
My goal is to be the Punisher. Apparently.
Right. I think that there was definitely some thought maybe behind bringing that Ronin character together in this. But I think you're absolutely right, Jason. It was the MacGuffin that kept the plot going until they decided to find other things. Like, I know we're going to talk about this, but I am so confused by Jack's character. I loved him so much, but I'm so confused
by
it.
He's just a red herring. That's the entire thing. Yeah. He's entirely a red herring. And I thought it was executed so weirdly, but also you just wanted to know, like, what is this guy's
the swordsman.
Like,
he's the swordsman.
Yeah, I know he's the swordsman, but he's not really the swordsman.
He's just so beautifully
He's just a rich guy who likes swords.
But yeah, that's exactly what it is. He's literally a rich dilettante who got really into swords. Yep. And you think, like, oh, that's sinister. That's weird. Who gets into swords? And you're like, well, just this guy who has too much money.
What I like about it is that you could argue that Kate is a rich dilettante who got into arrows, right?
Right.
Yep. And so it's that contrast that I think is interesting. But you're right. You're thinking, like, oh, he's behind it. What's it going to be? Well, he's in Marvel Comics. He's a swordsman. What does it mean? And the answer is it doesn't mean any of that stuff. He's literally everything he appears to be. Yeah.
He's a patsy.
He's the distraction for Eleanor. being the real the real bad guy in the, there. And that is delightful. I hadn't thought about it, you know. Yeah, he's a mirror image of Kate. He's got the sword, she's got the arrows.
But I mean, I enjoyed him immensely. Tony Dalton's performance is really good.
It's good.
Just scenery chewing. And like the fact that you then in retrospect look back and realize how genuine you read the book about being a stepdad, because he really did believe in it.
Yeah, he really did.
And I quoted his line up at the top, but that for me is one of the best lines of the series, where he's getting arrested and hauled away and he's just like, no, this is a mistake. I've never worked a day in my life. Or when he pulls out the sword at the end and start stabbing people randomly. Like
the only Sloan I'm familiar with. I dated a Sloan in Palm Beach, but she was a nightmare.
I've dreamed of this moment. Now is my time where swordplay is useful.
Have you ever been LARPing?
Speaking of LARPing, right? Like that's
because
that's
here it comes. I knew that was coming.
That's another theme, right?
Leisure activity.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so we should while we're talking about Jack the Swordsman, we should talk about the LARPers. There's LARPers in this, people, as a reason. You know, it's kind of like rolling a bunch of things together. It's like, how do they get from point A to point B a bunch of times? And they get some costumes out of it, and they get a group of people who they can put earpieces in and send to the thing at the Rainbow Room on episode 6, so that they can have a team, like a little crack team of LARPer / police officers and stuff like that. But it's a fun detail. It leads to a moment that I didn't think they were going to do, but they actually do, where all the LARPers are doing their play battles and Hawkeye walks right through them and he's doing his Hawkeye moves to get past all of their little swords and stuff, which was hilarious, because again, I that was one of those moments where I was just like, they went there, didn't they? They did it. They did the slow motion. Hawkeye dodges all of the blows of the LARPer's fake weapons. So good.
And it's real, and he's simultaneously having fun and can't believe he's doing this stupid stuff.
Yeah. It's when he mutters, I fought Thanos. Like, and it's just such tired dad energy where he's like, I would really rather just be on the couch playing a little PUBG Mobile.
but he likes them, and he kind of gets, you know, like, I like that he develops the friendship with Grills. And, you know, again, an adaptation of a comic character that is 100% different
from
that character.
Yeah,
but
not at all.
But still fulfills some of the same sort of role in some ways of having him have just a normal... You get the feeling Clint doesn't have a lot of normal friends, right?
No.
Regular friends, like, you know, people he just goes and has a beer with other than the Avengers. Mm-hmm. And
they only have shawarma.
Yeah, that's right. They only have shawarma. Steve doesn't drink. Come on. No. And I think that's kind of fun to just see him. I love the scene where he's like, he tells Grills, like, you can call me Clint. It's fine. You know, and he's like, what? You're an Avenger. Like, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me. Like, and I enjoy that relationship. I think it develops well throughout the series, and it humanizes Clint a lot too, because it puts him in a position of dealing with just ordinary people. And you remember, he too is just an ordinary person, even though he is an Avenger.
Yeah, I mean, he was so grim and stiff in the early movies, and this just loosens him up so much.
I was going to say, how many minutes of Clint Barton material did we really ever get in all those movies he was in?
Right.
Not a lot. And here, we get six, whatever, 45-minute long segments with him. Like, this really is what you're doing a TV series to do, which is actually open it up a little and get to deal with, like, who is this guy? How does he interact with other people? At this point, they're super famous. So I think it's really interesting, that moment where he's like, call me Clint, because it's like part of what he's doing here is dealing with the fact that he used to be a super secret assassin and now he's a famous hero. And like, wow, talk about whiplash. Like, to go from secret bad person who kills people to, for good reasons, but still it's bad, to just he's great and everybody knows it. Like, and how do you deal with that? Like, that's a real whiplash. And then also he's dealing with the fact that, like, people are coming up to him and saying, whether it's Kate or Grills, saying, oh, it's Hawkeye, he's amazing. And he's like, just... don't.
No.
Right? Like, and you didn't get to deal with any of that in a movie. Of all characters, Hawkeye is really in movies to move things along from point A to point B, and here we get to see more of that. So all those regular, you know, real world interactions that he has, I think are fun and not things that we've ever really gotten a chance to see before, because there was no time.
I really enjoy the fact that Clint is given the space to also have a disability. And how they played with that, and obviously with Echo and I loved how they use sign language, right? So there was real ASL that was being used for lots of the characters, and then you had Clint who knows as much ASL as I know Spanish. And then you've got
more cookies,
right. then you've got Kingpin who once saw a movie where there were interpreters, and he believes because he saw that movie, he also knows sign language. And it's just so patronizing the way, or maybe patronizing the way that Wilson Fisk, has the conversations with Maya. With the version of sign language that he has, it's really fun.
It was fascinating to me too to see this in close proximity to both an entirely unrelated title, Only Murders in the Building, and Eternals, both of which also featured sign language and deaf characters, which I thought was it was just a weird things come in threes sometimes.
Yeah.
But I do love the way they handled it here, both with the. The subtitles, there are subtle things with the subtitles, like when Clint is talking to Maya and he doesn't know all the right words, or he's sort of slow with some of the signs and things like that. Her lip reading at various points as well, like all of that sort of comes into play. Clint's sort of, he's not comfortable, right, with his whole, with the disability thing. He takes his hearing aids out at the musical. He gets to ignore Kate at one point when his hearing aid is broken and all that. Like, it's an interesting playing around with this guy who is not, you know, he is unlike Maya. He is not deaf from birth. And so it is a adaptation for him. He is something he is sort of coming to terms with. And that's an interesting experience as well. As per, I've had a lot of, you know, friends who are disabled who point out that, like, well, many of us will have disabilities in our lifetime at some point.
Right.
And so it's a matter of finding out how you sort of, you know, deal with those things.
If you live long enough, you need some accessibility at some point in your life, right?
Absolutely.
So, Hawkeye being deaf is also a comic book character, a feature of Hawkeye, I think like a Sonic Arrow or something. Yeah, it doesn't really matter. Here, he's like, you know, those explosions are really loud and it did damage me.
That montage is pretty good.
Just like leave it at that. But it gives Jeremy Renner something to play with. And it, of course, obviously is there to be juxtaposed with Maya. This character, Alequa Cox, who plays Maya, who is Echo, is sort of her comic thing. And the idea there, I think, is that she can see what your moves and then duplicate your moves, I think, is the idea. Behind her kind of superpower, but it's not like super detailed in here. By the way, before this even aired, they announced that they're going to do an Echo series for Disney Plus. So we'll see her again. Yeah. That's one of the things that they're going
to
go off doing.
But to her credit, she had never been in anything before this. This is her first
role. She's very, very good. And it's
great.
They're asking her to do a lot because she has to do all of her like fighting stuff. And she also, you know, her best friend betrays her. It's interesting because she's introduced in the show as a villain. And what you come to realize, and what she comes to realize, is that she's been played by all these people who say that they care about her. And that's why she's going to be able to have a TV show about her later, is that she's not actually a villain. She's been played in this way. But it is interesting that she and Clint get to have those moments too, because we've got this sort of new information about Clint having his, you know, having to have his hearing aids and you know, he's super. That's one of the cool things about portraying people with disabilities in superhero contexts, right? Because it's people, you end up with that mixture of like things that you could view of as a lack of something that they've got, but that they're also, you know, they have their unique things that they also have as part of who they are. And like, I feel like the metaphor and the opportunity to tell those kind of stories is just magnified because it's all magnified in a superhero context. So I think it's really fun that we've got Maya in there and that Clint is, you know, a little of the way down that path, even though his sign language is bad and he's just trying to figure it out.
Yeah. Let's also not forget that Alequa Cox is not only deaf, but also an amputee.
Which the show doesn't linger on, I thought. I thought it was, I noticed it eventually, but it wasn't one of those things where I felt like it was like, dun-dun-dun, kind of.
No. There's one scene where, like, he tries to hit her with a hockey stick, and it breaks. across her leg, and he's just like, hey, what? And then they just move on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
What I think is interesting is in a lot of ways, Maya has a very, very similar story to Kate Bishop in that they're only daughters. They're both only daughters of single parents, more or less. A little bit of tragedy in the backstory. Both of them relentlessly driven, but for different reasons. Both of them discover that the environments in which they were raised and nurtured and essentially custom raised for have been toxic in some way. And both of them are now just kind of figuring out who they are post origin story moment. And I do kind of wish we had seen the parallels made a little bit more clearly in the show, just because it would have also done a great job of underscoring some of the messages about how sometimes being a hero is a matter of circumstance. Sometimes it's a matter of character, and sometimes it's a matter of personal choice. And really it can go any way you want it to go. Because arguably Maya has the potential to be another Kate Bishop. It's just she was born, she was born into a criminal organization, or more overtly, she was born into a criminal organization where the criminals get convicted.
Exactly. Yeah. But you can you should say Kate was born into privilege, and so she is kind of like has to figure out her place in the world, and Maya was not, and she has to figure out her place in the world. And you're right, they are interestingly parallel or reflections of each other in that way too.
Yeah.
It's a good character. We only touched on Kate's mom a little bit, Vera Farmiga, another good bit of casting.
Yes.
As the mom, and she's like holding it all together, and it turns out, oh no, she's been working for the Kingpin all along, and she is not, if not the big bad, she is bad, and of course gets turned in by Kate at the end, as we've talked about.
I thought for sure she had murdered Kate's dad. for four episodes.
Four episodes, you were convinced.
That's a great way to like cover up a murder if it happens during the middle of an alien invasion, right?
Oh my
like,
God, that would be great.
Lisa. Don't take any ideas from that.
Don't be near Lisa during an alien invasion. That's what I'm saying.
The Widow Schmeiser. Yeah.
It's just a good bit of casting. She plays all those levels of being mom and caring about Kate, which she does. It's very much a I would say almost Godfather-esque kind of thing, right? Which is like, I don't want you to be part of the, like, Michael, you're supposed to be special, right? Like it is. She's like, I'm protecting you, honey. But, you know, but she's not. Like, I mean, she's in it. She's deep in it. And that's just how it is. And Kate can't reason her out of it, right? Like, this is her life. This is what she's like. And so you get to see those different sides. And it's a good, really good bit of casting to get an actress as good as Vera Farmiga to come in and do that part. Like, I think she did a great job.
She does a great job with, like, morally ambivalent parents anyway.
Right?
She was recently cast as Livia Soprano. In the
Many Saints of Newark, right?
Yeah. So she plays Livia Soprano. Did a great job with that, and I remember her from Bates Motel, where she plays Norma Bates, and it was just this great mix of deeply damaged woman and mom who's desperately trying her best but can't see how her own personal damage is turning her son into a killer. And there was a little bit of that going on here too, where she does terrible things and she's telling herself that she does them with the best of intentions, which somehow, like, frees her up to do things like frame her fiance for white collar crimes and take out hits on the guy her daughter's running around with and things like that. So I hope we see more of her. I hope she gets broken out of prison somehow or goes back to being Kate's adversary so that the two of them have to plumb that relationship some more.
Nice. Okay, so I should mention the Tracksuit Mafia.
Bro.
It's Tracksuit Mafia, bro. So these guys are a recurring bit in the comics. They say bro all the time. They wear their Adidas tracksuits. Here they are the organization around, it turns out, around Eleanor and the Kingpin and Maya. Like, they're all part of the underworld kind of conspiracy that's going on here. But we meet a few of the characters. We learn about them. They're not all particularly bright, but they are all kind of interesting. At least a few of them are kind of interesting as characters, but they also are a good kind of running gag / threat, which is good. And I want to use this moment to also say they are the chasers in what is, I think, the one of the best action sequences I've ever seen in a Marvel anything, which is the wild car chase, with many kinds of variety pack of arrows and camera, just so well done. The camera that keeps moving back and forth in what seems to be a continuous shot as you're smashing into cars and cars are smashing. Just so well done. And of course the tracksuits are key to that too. But I love that scene so much. And of course they used it in the trailers, and there's all that funny dialogue about like, this is too dangerous. And she's like,
four arrows more dangerous than this.
Like, it's just so good. But it was fun to see the tracksuits, and that action sequence is incredible.
Those two guys who keep popping up, are I love them. I mean, the whole bit that comes back at the end in episode 6, where Kate runs into the guy that she's talked to, counseled through his relationship.
Right.
Oh, problems. He went to see Maroon 5.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, hey. And they like catch up for a minute. He's like, and she like points to the gun. He's like, what's this about? It's like, oh, you know. Like, I those two guys are great.
Yeah.
I enjoy the scene too where Clint shoots the message in the arrow into their car, and they're like, oh, but we are not Maya, bro. You
know? Bro, what is this message?
Yeah, I mean, they have a lot of fun with it. The Trust a Bro Moving Company, mm-hmm. all of that. I mean, the weird headcanon I have for the, like, you know, the Kingpin, who is this giant crime lord, is basically in employing these faceless and kind of inept Russian, is that like he got blipped and like he's having to rebuild his entire criminal enterprise. He's starting his way up from the bottom. But it is just a lot of fun, and it provides a great bit for the showcase at the end, the last action sequence with Kate and Clint, where they get to drag out
sequence.
All the arrows, and that is, boy, is that scene fantastic.
What I want to know about the Tracksuit Mafia is, what are their recruitment drives like?
Do they give you a tracksuit? Do you have to bring your own?
I mean, because they were everywhere. They were, like, in that last scene in Rockefeller Center, there were thousands. It reminded me of, like, the fight right before a boss fight in a video game.
They get them in from the old country.
Right.
Yep, that's sure. part of it. Is they're like, bro, come over to America, bro.
Like,
bro.
Yeah. Right.
And then also,
we give you a tracksuit, bro.
If right. you're walking down the street and you see a guy in a tracksuit, you go, bro, you need bro. Work? Bro, I have work for you. And believe it or not,
maybe
that's,
they hang out at the tracksuit store where, like, if a guy with a certain build comes in, they're like, 10% off for you, bro, but do a favor for us. And then
yeah,
you're in too deep.
I think that they're just really good at that, at both of those methods of recruiting. And that's, yeah, that last episode. So I loved, loved that last episode where there is the shootout, like up at the Rainbow Room, because it's all at Rockefeller
yes.
Center, because right. The Christmas tree, this is all a Christmas themed show, right? It's happening around the holidays. So where else are you going to end up with a bloody shootout on the skating rink at Rockefeller Center? Hawkeye is up in the Christmas tree at one point, which they blow up and knock
right.
over.
Knock over the Christmas tree. And right.
They shrink people. There's an owl.
Kate and Yelena's fight scene in that episode that moves through all the offices
yeah.
in the building
yeah.
is just, I mean, it's up there. It's not quite as spectacular as the car chase scene, but it is clearly a cut from the same cloth, like moving stuff. They're sort of panning in and out. They're each getting their licks in. It's just a fabulous action scene.
It's a kind of a funny version of the Daredevil hallway fight.
Yes. Right. Yes. And it has as somebody pointed out, I think when we discussed it on Biff, like it's set up almost like comic book panels because you keep panning into an
right.
office and it's framed like a panel and then they move on.
It's so, so good. Yeah. That whole episode is good. The bird in the tree. Cause remember
the
there was
in the tree.
There's a story about that owl that was in the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree or the,
right.
Oh yeah.
And they're like, oh, what are they going to do when they had to get the owl out and all that? Well, so they're like, we're going to put an owl in that tree too. And it's going to be a payoff and it's going to be a whole other.
He's gonna
Hawkeye's there and an
eat
owl
those
is there.
Before they re.
Apparently
before they size up again?
That was the originally supposed to be the end, the post-credit sequence was van with in the owl's nest, basically. But they did do that one.
How horrifying would that owl pellet be to dissect? You're like, why are there tiny tracksuits in there? What's going on?
Tracksuits that the owl just took. It's a
man.
Okay.
You made that even darker, Lisa.
I did.
The anything about owls? It's dark. It's a little bit dark. So we mentioned Yelena. We should mention Florence Pugh, who's in Black Widow, and she's great in Black Widow. And yes, again, cynically, as I said on that episode and earlier this time, you could say, yes, well, they got to do a new Black Widow now that the old Black Widow is dead. Yeah. Also, Florence Pugh is hilarious and great. Yes. And so, I mean, I get a very Killing Eve vibe from her, which is, I think, the highest compliment, that she is both going to murder you, but also kind of quirky and funny. And here she reappears. I don't have a lot of time for the sitcom level misunderstanding about Clint. Her blaming Clint for her sister's death. Like, I guess it needs to be a motivator, but the whole time I'm like, if you guys could talk for like 10 minutes, you could work this out and
listen,
understand.
There was a whole two and a half hour movie between Batman and Superman where you could say the exact same
thing. I know.
Thing.
Well, I didn't love that movie either. So I guess, but you know what? It doesn't kind of matter because Florence Pugh is just, she's just so delightful. And they put her with Kate Bishop and talk about showing somebody the
chemistry.
Ropes. She shows
chemistry.
Her, she shows her the ropes too. And it's like, not the ropes Hawkeye wants to show her. And it's great. Like just such a great little appearance by her.
If you are not, you know, if you are Kevin Feige and not looking at that and going, we need to have these two actors in scenes together as much as possible, then you should lose your job, frankly, because
Avengers 5, it's just Kate and Florence Pugh.
Kate and Yelena. The two of them in the scene in Kate's apartment is a scene which is all dialogue, and yet it is edge of your seat, like, what is gonna happen here? And I think that is just, it's amazing. It's great writing, apparently a lot of some ad-libbing in there, great performances from both of them. Like, I mean, we lauded Hailee Steinfeld earlier, but like, if anybody could upstage her, it may be Florence Pugh, and just the two of them seem to have so much chemistry.
Well, I don't know how many of you have seen Killing Eve, but there are scenes in Killing Eve where Jodie Comer and Sandra Oh are having conversations, and it's very much the same thing, which is like, I am a killer who may kill you, but I may not be interested in killing you. I may just want to talk and make jokes, but I may also want to kill you. And it leads to these scenes that are just dialogue, like you said, Dan, and yet within the back of your mind, you're like, or is she just, you know, softening her up before she kills her. It's amazing. Like, it really focuses the mind on dialogue when you're worried somebody is going to kill somebody else in the middle of the dialogue. Yeah.
I feel like I'm about to get thrown off of the podcast, this is the piece Chip that bounced off of me.
Really?
There's no accounting for taste.
Add a little sriracha, Chip.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I'm not going to dwell on it because everybody in the world loved it. I was the outlier, so I'm not going to try to drag people along with me. There was something about her that just sort of bounced off of me, that in the middle of all of the other sort of unreality and artificiality of the series, the quirkiness of the dialogue between the two, the I like you but I'm going to kill you stuff, especially the banter during the fight at the in the last episode between Kate and Yelena, just didn't
do it for you.
Didn't do me for you. Yeah. I felt kind of like those people who don't like the Three Stooges and watch other people laughing at the Three Stooges. It just didn't quite get me.
I think what does work for me for the dynamic there is that it's very clear to me that and this sort of, I think, is in contrast to what you were saying, Jason, very clear to me that Yelena is not going to kill Kate.
Yeah.
That is not who she is, and it's fine. There's still tension there, but I think for me, it's all about Yelena's pulling her punches, and she really is like, look, I don't have a problem with you. Like, you're in my way, but like, I kind of like you, and I'm not going to kill you. I just need to get past you. And I think that it also is part of that is, you know, we see a little bit of the Yelena story, and I love that little vignette that we get about Yelena getting blipped. I think it's like that five minutes at the beginning of her episode. Yeah. Like, it's great stuff. And when you start understanding, you know, and obviously a lot of it's dependent on having seen Black Widow and knowing who that character is. But I think it seems clear to me, like, you know, she's not a bad person, right? Like, yes, she has murdered people. Like, who hasn't?
So is Hawkeye.
So is Hawkeye, yeah. But like having that, you know, sort of her trying to feel out having a relationship with someone, like a friendship with someone, is also kind of a big deal. Yeah. So I enjoy that sort of dynamic as they're trying to suss each other out and be like, yeah, I kind of feel like we could be friends, but we also just have very different goals right now.
Yeah, but I think that's, I get it, Chip. I mean, it's fine for you to not like that. But
Take your blueberry and go home.
Yeah. Wilson Fisk, we should mention Vincent D'Onofrio. This is one of those things we've seen both Matt Murdock appears in a recent spider-based film, and here we get Vincent.
Spoilers.
There it is. If you've seen, really, if you're listening to this, come on. But Vincent D'Onofrio is not the only character from Daredevil to appear in an MCU thing in the last couple of months as a cameo. Although, you know, it's a little more than a cameo here. And it's very clearly, you know, he's playing some of the hits of Kingpin, which was a great performance in the Netflix Daredevil series. They leave him sort of like killed off screen, which means not killed. I think the idea there is that
you don't bring Vincent D'Onofrio for one episode.
No, and I get the impression, like, based on comic book lore, there, you know, he may come back as being like kind of wounded and all that, which is maybe right good because it gives him, makes him a little less powerful and a little more on defense, and maybe that's an interesting character. But yeah, it's fun to see him. He gets a big fight with Kate. We know how scary he is because if you saw Daredevil, he's scary. So although he's very powerful in a way that maybe I saw some people are like, why is Kingpin nigh indestructible? And I was like, I don't know. He's the Kingpin.
He just is, man.
You can't kill him.
Don't worry about it.
He's just like, yeah.
He's dense.
He's bitten by a radioactive bowling donut. Pin.
Yes.
Or something. I don't know.
Cue ball, really.
But it's great. It was great to see him. That. Because again, just like it took me back to season one of Daredevil, where it's like, oh, Vincent D'Onofrio with your weird breathing and your eyes and your just all these strange.
His weird delivery.
Talk about good casting. He's such an odd actor, and to pour all that into Kingpin, it's like, it's just really great. It's so very particular.
He's very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I like him a lot. I think it's interesting to watch him here and, you know, try to draw those lines in your head. He said to his mind, he is playing the same character from the Daredevil series, which is totally fine. Obviously there are a few differences. I did laugh at his Hawaiian shirt. Feel like
I know it is a
comic book reference. I can also not imagine the Daredevil version of that character ever wearing that shirt, but he's wearing the cufflinks.
I love I love the headcanon that he got blipped and he's down on his luck, and all he can afford is this stupid Hawaiian shirt.
But D'Onofrio is great. He has a presence to him. It's so undeniable, and watching him in these scenes is just fantastic. It's nice to see him back, and I agree with you. You kill him off screen because, come on, he's Vincent D'Onofrio playing Kingpin. You don't bring him back for all that fanfare for one episode only to toss him aside again.
No,
yeah, they gotta have plans. There's more there.
For sure.
There's got to be more there. Maybe in the Echo series.
Almost certainly.
Yeah, maybe. I would think so. Or
maybe see him pop up in movies from time to time, too.
What do they do with Daredevil, too?
Yeah,
right. What are they doing with Daredevil?
My wish casting is that you're going to see Daredevil and Kingpin in an upcoming Spider-Man movie because there's a sweet spot in the 80s and 90s that it seems that Kevin Feige and a lot of the Marvel brass, those are comics that they really loved. And that stretch of Marvel comics, Spider-Man and Daredevil were buds, you know, sitting up on a rooftop watching Galactus going to fight and saying, yep, this is way out of our league. Do you want some popcorn?
If you're wish casting, I want to see Jessica Jones in this too. I would have liked to have actually seen an Easter egg here where she's just sipping coffee as she watches the fight go on.
Given the Daredevil stuff coming back, I feel like I wouldn't bet against any of that.
Yeah, and Mike Coulter, I would love for Mike Coulter
to be
Danny
rescued.
Yeah, well, you can leave Iron Fist in the past. Leave Iron Fist in the past.
Leave him. He's gone.
There are plenty of other monasteries in the Himalaya who have.
We have a
Shang-Chi
now. We don't need a Danny Rand.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yes,
but I would take Mike Coulter in some other form too because he was great. There are all those things that they now have access to. It actually is funny that I know this is a little aside, but it's funny. Marvel now has access to so much material with their Disney's purchase of Fox and with the Netflix stuff having reached the end of their exclusivity window, and they literally can't deploy it all fast enough, right? Like that's the thing is that you know it took them a while to get to these little moments. with things like Kingpin. And what else might they do? Plus, there's the X-Men and Fantastic Four and all that that's kind of floating out there. So, like, there's just so much. And it's kind of interesting because we want to see some of it, but, like, there's only so much they can do with it.
I think it's it goes back to what we were talking about at the very beginning, which I think has been a really smart move by the MCU brass the entire time, which is, look, we have this huge field of IP, and it's only getting bigger, but we have the luxury to be able to, when we bring stuff to screen, say, let's take what works, let's leave what doesn't behind.
Yeah.
So being able to pull in, you know, Charlie Cox and Vincent D'Onofrio, because it's like, look, they were great. They were great at what they did.
Absolutely.
Yes, does this mean we have to pull in every single thing from the Netflix shows? It doesn't. We can just choose what we want.
Where is Senor Foggy? Where is Senor Foggy?
I wouldn't bet against him showing up against either, because that's also great, great casting. But I mean, it lets them do that and say, like, we can take the stuff that we liked and we can sort of pick and choose, just as we've done with the comics, and say, like, we don't have to faithfully represent, nor could we, like 70 years of comics continuity, because that would be a mess. But we can pull the stuff that works and remix it into something that is, you know, sufficient for our audience.
Sure.
What about the sort of tone of this Hawkeye series? You know, compare it to the old Netflix shows. This is much lighter, much less graphic. Much harsher. It's very Disney Plus. It's very PG-13, which I said on the Spider-Man No Way Home. I think that's, for me, my sweet spot for Marvel content.
Yeah.
But I also compare this to Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And the stakes are kind of similar for both shows, and they're both sort of kind of grounded in the same way. And yet this has just so much more character, just so much more flair. I think that for baseline non-superpowered Marvel stories, I think this is the gold standard right now.
I like you can tell different kinds of stories. Like, I like Loki because it is a weird time travel adventure. And obviously, WandaVision is all about playing with, like, TV formats and things like that. But I'll go with you, Chip, that I think there is a great freedom in saying, here are some characters you know and some characters you don't, and they got into a mess and they got to figure it out. And I don't know, the Falcon and Winter Soldier, and I know there were production issues, but they also seem kind of weighed down with, like, it's a global scale and there's a big thing. And it's like, maybe it's
about
okay.
About refugees, and it's about racial identity in America. And
right.
It's
and
about...
it might have been about a pandemic, but we had to delete that part because, you know, reasons. So whereas Hawkeye is like, you know, Hawkeye went to New York for Christmas and he got into some trouble and he met some interesting people. And here's the story.
And he got a dog.
And he got a dog. The end, right? Like, it's okay.
And we find out his wife was in S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, boom. You know.
So there's that. I hadn't gotten there, but yes, that's people. Yeah. Also, people on the internet who are like, oh, what does it mean? The watch, what does it mean? It's like, you know, all they're really trying to do there is give you a little Easter egg about where Linda Cardellini came from. That's
maybe
really
he met
all
his wife
to
at work. That's what they're trying to tell you. He met his wife at work.
I wanted to say, as per Chip's point, like the tone, I think there's a reason this, I think, is my favorite of the shows. And I think it's just because it is fun. Just like, it is unabashedly fun. It's very lighthearted.
Yeah.
It totally nails that tone for me. And I've loved all the shows in various ways. I think this is one of the first that I would imagine going back and rewatching a lot, just because I feel like it's just the entertainment value is so high. And I mean, to be fair to Falcon and Winter Soldier, I think they shot for something much higher. They were much more ambitious, as you said, with the global scale, and they were trying to deal with some really big issues. And that's hard. Like, it was a hard job they gave themselves, and they didn't quite manage to nail it, but you got, like, a degree of difficulty thing going on there, too. So I agree that I think, you know, for me, this tone really does kind of nail where the MCU does its best work. Is we're going to be fun, we're going to have some feels and some emotional discussions, but overall, this is about people, like, you know, doing action scenes and trading quips, and that's a pretty great place for the MCU.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, even the heavy parts were light. In this, right? Like that was. It was really cool. It was kind of like Ant-Man, right? It was.
Yes, exactly.
You know, it was Ragnarok.
Yes.
In terms of tone, but it was more Ant-Man in terms of grounded. You know, groundedness. Even though they wind up in the quantum realm in Ant-Man, but this was. Yeah, this was, it was fun. It was delightful rewatching it for this was not a chore at all. And also, I think 6 episodes was like the sweet spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The sixth episode was a little bit longer. It was, you know, so most of the episodes were about 35, 40 minutes. The last episode was about an hour. I think it clocked in at around 57 minutes. But of course, the last 3 minutes of that was the post-credit full I could do this all day number, which was worth every penny. My partner was sitting and watching, didn't watch the entire series. I was so upset with her because she didn't sit down and watch the series with me. And I was like, hey, come and watch this. You'll love this. And she didn't. But then she came and she watched the last episode and a half. And then by the time we got to the end of it and we're watching the number at the end, I'm tapping my feet and she is just laughing at me because I love musicals and she doesn't. Right. So, and even this fake Rogers, the musical, wasn't a musical, but it was a musical. It was a musical number. And it gave legitimate Broadway people. Those were definitely Broadway people. Gave legitimate Broadway people mm-hmm. something to do when they didn't have a chance to do. So I can do that all day. Let's go.
All right. Yeah. The length thing, I think they're still trying to find their way. And I do think that since there are no actual like time slots to fill, that they're going to get better at figuring out what the right pace is of a story and saying if it's 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or 5 or 4, like whatever, like it doesn't really matter. Because yeah, this felt right sized and I didn't get that, like the Netflix shows we talked about it way back when, they sagged deep in the middle because Netflix wanted everything to be 13 episodes and this is just, there's no time for sagging. It's just this
really, I will say, if anything, I got to the end of every episode thinking like, that's the end?
Yeah.
But, right. I need more right now. Inject it into my veins.
I'd rather have that than when you're okay, not only do I have my laptop open because I'm looking at something else, I might also have my iPad open.
Yeah.
I used to do with the Netflix shows, I would watch 7 episodes in a day. And then you have that like hungover feeling from like, yes. Oh God, I ate so much candy and watched so much Netflix.
Watched so much Daredevil. Yep. Like this is the thing is I had to break up Daredevil into like half episode chunks because otherwise it was just too much. But this was like perfect holiday viewing because
yes,
and what I loved about the timing of the series is it started like right during Thanksgiving week when you're beginning to gear up into that, and it ended right before Christmas and you're like, we've all been on a journey together, we can all enjoy Christmas now.
Yeah, it was an interesting decision on their part to time it this way, but it actually ended up being kind of fun. It's like, perfect. what if Marvel did a Christmas movie, what would that be? And the answer is, in the end, Hawkeye's in a tree and they blow up the Christmas tree and they shoot a bunch of people on the ice at Rockefeller's. I mean, it would be this, and it's good. It's fun.
Giant arrow on the Manhattan Bridge.
Yeah. Oh God.
Yeah, don't worry about these things. Please don't. I'm sorry. I'm so tired of episode like blog posts, but there's a giant plot hole. They never shrink the thing. Oh, Hank Pym is back and he's got Pym particles. That ruins everything about Endgame. Guys, Jesus. Settle down.
It's gonna be okay. It's
enjoy
gonna be fine.
The
it's just
ride.
A TV show.
Yeah. Enjoy. Any final thoughts ride. about Hawkeye before we wrap it up? It was a lot of fun.
It was delightful. It was delightful, right? Like I'm a 45-year-old black man from New York City. I don't say delightful.
I think you were delighted.
You could basically sing the song that they were singing at the end of it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. I'm just curious if people think there's going to be like, are we going to do a second season? Are we going to do a show that's just about Kate? I don't know, but I'm kind of here for any of it.
I'm here for more Kate Bishop. Absolutely.
I want a show about Jack where Jack becomes a LARPer because he thinks it's fun.
is that some sort of leisure activity?
Yes, some leisure activity. And like the next time there's like a big apocalyptic battle in New York, you see him on like a white steed leading a phalanx of LARPers into the fray. Like that is my wish casting. It was just like there wasn't anything really depressing about this series. If there weren't any big bring down moments, if that makes sense, and there wasn't anything infuriating about the character development, and it was just fun and it fit, like it made sense in the context of the MCU.
I wouldn't mind seeing Hawkeye in some other places as superhero dad.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But I also want to see Kate Bishop do some other stuff. If they did another Hawkeye series together, I think that would be fun. I'm not sure that that's in their plans, but I'm reminded that the second half of the Fraction series was basically two storylines alternating with Kate and Clint. And I could see a pitch like that, right? Which is, we're going to tell two stories with them, maybe on opposite coasts, and have it, you know, have the stories come together at the end. But whatever it is, I wouldn't mind seeing Clint again, and I definitely want to see Kate again, because that was a lot of fun. And now they've got their new Hawkeye that they can put out there.
Well, we've seen the television show Kate and Allie. How about Kate and Elena?
Kate and Elena. Oh, sure.
Absolutely.
Let's do it.
I'm feeling really good about the future of the MCU right now, in movies and TV. You know, as an old comics fan, I've got access to 60 years worth of stories, and I'm always kind of unnerved by the fact that, you know, I would have liked more stories with Chris Evans as Captain America. I would have liked more stories with all of these characters, because there is a comparative infinite number of comics and only so many TV shows and movies that you can put out. But what Marvel's doing with introducing new characters like Kate, and sort of bridging them, and with some of the other new characters sort of in the pipeline, they're just constantly reloading, and they're doing it with interesting actors and actresses and characters. I'm just even when we're well past the time that we're going to get any more Iron Man and Captain America movies, at least as part of this continuity, they're continuing to reload.
Yeah. It's a good sign. Casting is a big part of that too. A lot of good casting here. Well, can't wait for the next one. Oh, is it Moon Knight, Dan? Is Moon Knight
it's
the
Moon
next
Knight
one?
Time, Jason.
Oh,
get
no.
ready.
I'm actually really looking forward to that. We kid. Who the heck is Moonlight? But
did you wish for something real hard, Dan?
That monkey's paw I was using. Yeah.
You know, I have liked Moon Knight a lot in the comics, so I'm looking forward to Oscar Isaac. Bring it on. But that wraps up our conversation about Hawkeye. Let me thank my panelists one last time. This has been a lot of fun. Chip Sutter, thank you.
I could do this all day.
Dan Morin, thank you.
Bro, thank you, bro.
All right. Lisa Schmeiser, thank you.
If I met Huey Lewis, I'd be speechless.
And Cicero Holmes, thank you.
I love Imagine Dragons, bro.
And thanks to everyone out there for listening to this episode of The Incomparable. We will see you next time.